Welcome back to Transform, a podcast highlighting the people and ideas shaping the future of senior living. I'm Austin Montgomery for Senior Housing News. On today's episode, I spoke with Aaron Shadbolt, the CEO of Ascension Living. The St. Louis-based senior living company operates 21 communities across multiple states.
I feel like if we really want to invite the next generation of residents in with us, we are going to have to make it a lot easier.
Ascension Living has undergone a strategic transformation in recent years, refining its portfolio to align more closely with its hospital system and expanding programs that support residents across the full continuum of care. The organization is investing in technology upgrades, geriatric care coordination, and making staffing improvements to create a more seamless experience for residents and their families, with a focus on reducing institutional settings and elevating care in independent living and assisted living environments. Ascension Living is positioning itself to meet the needs of today's and tomorrow's seniors. Now, here's my interview with Ascension Living CEO, Aaron Shadbolt. Aaron, thanks so much for joining us here on Transform.
Hi, Austin. Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here with you.
Awesome. And for those who aren't familiar with Ascension Living, can you outline the organization's current senior living portfolio and just tell us a little bit about the organization?
Sure. So Ascension Living currently has 21 senior living communities. This is a combination of standalone skilled nursing facilities all the way to standalone independent living. We also have various services within our communities, such as adult daycare, you know, memory support, of course, and assisted living as well. We have some specialty locked memory support units in our skilled nursing facilities. And then under the Ascension Living umbrella is also four PACE locations.
Wow, that's exciting. This is something that I'm still working on, but in the month ahead, I think we'll be putting together a PACE story. So I might have to reach out to you on that because
yes. You
know, there are just so many ways that operators are thinking about interacting with PACE. So I digress. We'll go back to our topic, but that's awesome to hear. Thanks for that rundown. That's very helpful. And we know that you recently stepped into the CEO role during a time of pretty significant change for Ascension Living, and including, I think a sale of multiple communities and 9 hospitals to Prime Healthcare. Would love to know how this has really reshaped Ascension Living's strategic focus and some opportunities that it may have brought forward.
Yeah, so, you know, we have been, I would say that actually the sales are a result of already shifted strategic priorities. So we've been really thinking about Ascension for years now about how do we support our patients in a continuum of healthcare, including ensuring that they can stay in the place that they call home to receive services. And you can see there, you know, Ascension has committed to that with our joint venture with Compassus and Ascension at Home, and then our ongoing management of a senior living portfolio, which we see a lot of health systems getting out of that business. For us, as we looked at our health system and we thought about how do we strategically partner and really serve the patients of Ascension, it became really clear that we needed to make sure that we were serving in sites that were mostly aligned to our hospital system. And so we've seen, you know, as Ascension was going to reduce the number of hospitals in the Chicago area, it made sense for us to also reduce the number of our senior livings because we're really trying to mirror that acute care footprint. At the same time, we see that the future of senior living is probably really going to be on the housing side. So bringing in a team of service providers into independent or assisted living or memory support that really elevate the level of care in those settings to avoid transitions into skilled nursing whenever possible. We hear from our consumers, they don't like the institutional setting. They don't want that. And unfortunately for us right now, most skilled nursing facilities really are very institutional still.
Right. And I think one of the things that we've heard recently and in the last few years, especially as operators have put some of the pandemic challenges behind them, is that they've really rethought their service models and the ways that they can either help residents stay in their continuum wherever they're at, whether that's at a lower acuity or in higher acuity assisted living or memory care, with these multiple services that you can offer. Sounds like you're really thinking about that as well. So awesome to be able to dive in that a little bit more. I want to touch on your experience, though, because you've got quite the background. You've gone from chief nursing officer to COO, and I'd love to know maybe how that's helped influence your leadership approach now that you're CEO of Ascension.
Yeah. So, I am a nurse. I'm an RN by background, mostly hospice, which is really kind of an interesting background because I'm new to senior living. And I think, Austin, you and I have talked a few times, so you probably remember that about me. Although I'm getting to the end of my third year. So I don't know if I'm new for much longer. I think maybe I am young in the,
I think you're fitting the setting, right in.
But yeah. I'm not brand new anymore. So, being a nurse, I think I have a different connection maybe to our frontline clinicians and some of the challenges and some of the workflows that I'm just fortunate to have because I've been a nurse and I've worked the floor and I kind of understand some of the challenges that are very real challenges for our clinicians taking care of our residents. I use my experience as the CNO to really think about how do we leverage our people and our staffing to drive better financial performance. And that's a work in progress. You know, when I started, we had a lot of agency, a lot of turnover. That has been a journey over the past 3 years. We're using a quarter of the agency today that we were when I started. Which is great and certainly has been a big improvement. But that is one of the things that I'm really focused on as the CEO of a senior living is how do we really support our clinicians and our associates that are serving our residents in a way that creates, for one, sort of a feeling of family. I'm actually at a community right now, and they very much have that here. And it's great. My associates love it. My residents love it. The people that are visiting love it. So how do we really create a sense of community for our associates and elevate them in a way that they start to drive our process improvement? And we're doing a lot of work right now at Ascension Living with things like real-time listening, where associates anytime, day or night, can submit, an electronic concern. It's not anonymous, so they sort of have to take ownership of it. But there's a process to track leadership response time to that, and it drives a level of kind of follow-up and leadership from our clinicians that I think is unique and is going to create some really nice opportunities for us in how we start to attract and retain the best associates that are out there for senior living.
Right. And it really sounds like you're putting your money where your mouth is on that employee experience side of the house, because we know that I think oftentimes we hear, especially at some of the conferences that we'll frequent, there's a lot of talk on staffing, but to hear some of the actionable things that have some of the changes that have been put in place, sometimes it's a bit tougher to make those changes a reality. And we all hear that communication is the most important tool. So it sounds like you're obviously tackling that head on of being able to have that communication piece before front and center for your team. So that's really exciting to hear. And I know you kind of touched on it just a little bit, but I want to go back to some of our previous coverage of Ascension, because you had mentioned the importance of what you had called in the previous article, culture of connection and transparency. Can you maybe share how maybe some of the early impacts or feedback that you've received and how that's played into where your operational priorities lie? I'd love to, because I think you just mentioned that communication piece. And so I think that ties right into it. I'd love to hear more.
Yeah. So one of the things that I like to think of myself as a scientist. I have some background in healthcare innovation and implementation. I have a certificate from IU Health in that. And so I think a lot about experiments and how do we test things to see what really works. And I've done a lot of tests. I've used puppets for part of my town hall with mixed results, I'll be honest. I think generally people liked it. And I also got complaints that I am not taking things serious enough. And I hear that, right? That is great feedback. Some associates are not going to be okay with that level of levity. And that's part of being the CEO, is sort of knowing what is going to be okay and what isn't. But probably one of the things I've done that has made the biggest difference is I actually send these monthly videos. They're short, usually less than 2 minutes. It's a series and it's called What Makes You Smile at Work. And anytime I'm in a community, I try to grab someone and make a video about what makes them smile at work. And what has been amazing about this is that for one, people recognize me, which is like a little thing, but we're 100% remote. You know, my associates there's no corporate office, there's no home office, there's no way that they would know who I am outside of if they're lucky enough that they're here on a shift when I come, or they see these videos and people see me and they recognize me and they'll ask me questions. And now associates will come up and they'll tell me, hey, I want to tell you what makes me smile at work. And I love that. That has also, I think, created more of a feeling of being able to share concerns with their leadership, with me. And again, we're implementing this electronic process to make that even faster and more timely. But I think a lot of trying to figure out the piece of associate retention is there's big rocks, you know, compensation. And it's hard right now. I just rounded last night with some associates and, you know, it's hard for them to pay their bills and they're having to get other jobs. And as a CEO, that's really hard. I don't want people to have to get a second job. And also, you know, we're a business. And so we have a budget that we have to follow. But being able to at least have the conversations with my associates face to face, because they know me from those videos and they're willing to come up and say like, hey, I can't feed my family with what you pay me. That's gut-wrenching for me. And also, how else do I respond to that unless people come and really do share their stories with me? So we're not perfect at Ascension Living, but we've made, I think, a lot of progress in trying to connect our associates to their leaders and their leaders to our associates, and starting to create that feeling that, you know, we're really all in this together. And it is a really hard time. It's a hard time to be a business. It's a hard time to be a person trying to take care of your family. And we're all just trying to do the best we can. Right. And we're in it together. And it is a hard time. And so we'll get through that. And we're lucky at Ascension Living that we can pray together about it. And I think that makes a big difference to our associates here too.
I think too, it sounds like you've really tackled a lot of the pieces on staffing in the last 3 years really head on. It seems like you've really rolled up your sleeves and thought about this intentionally. I want to talk about 2025 here for a moment, just in terms of, I know we're already in September. I can't believe it. I mean, we've got the Nick Fall Conference, I think, wraps up today. And I think there's just all sorts. It's crazy that we're already almost through the year. But in terms of this year for 2025, what's been the main focus when it comes to operations? It sounds like it's been on that staffing side, but I want to hear it from you, kind of where you think those priorities and operations have been this year.
Yeah, well, lucky for me, I'm actually at the end of my first quarter of my fiscal year, so I can tell you what my fiscal year is looking like. So we actually, you're right, we've done some deep diving on staffing and you know, I think most of it is not unknown. It's good scheduling, it's connecting with associates, it's good recruitment, you know, speeding things up where you can, making it seamless where you can. Now we're at a place where sort of the next step is really every single community working on their own action plan around, like, what does it look like in your community to get staffed? I think a good example of this is I have lots of communities that practically are next door to a college. You know, that is a very different solution to staffing woes than communities that are totally isolated in rural Indiana, right? So we are really at a place where we're trying to empower our executive directors to identify, you know, what's the data you need? What are the analytics that are going to be helpful? What are the resources that you need? What tools do you have? What do you not have to work on the biggest workforce issue for you at your community? And right now, because we've spent so much time and energy on agency, now we see, you know, lots of overtime. And I would rather have overtime of my own associates than have agency.
Right.
And also I want my associates to be able to have some work-life balance and to be staffed well enough that we don't have to use overtime as part of our day-to-day operations.
Right. And it really seems like, too, you've really worked yourself out of that reliance on agency. And we know that that's a tough thing to do, especially for operators that maybe had to rely on it for one case or another for a majority of what they were staffing. So we know that that's been a journey over the last few years as well. And at the beginning of our conversation, you had mentioned kind of about bringing in services that you can kind of wrap around residents, regardless of where they're at in the continuum. And maybe this fits into a question in on growth, but I want to touch on, are there any areas you're thinking of maybe opportunities for growth? It seems like you were kind of alluded to it a little bit with those service lines of being able to have kind of new ways to reach residents and help them stay or to manage transitions a bit more smoothly from one level of continuum to the other. Any new areas of growth you're really looking at? Where are you seeing opportunities currently?
Yeah, I think that there's a couple of places that I'm looking at with growth. I mean, in general, as I mentioned, our divestments were part of trying to get to closer alignment with the hospital system.
Right.
We have some pretty significant gaps to being aligned with our hospital system. So we are looking at acquisitions or potentially new builds to align better to that acute care footprint and just serve the Ascension patients with our services. When we look at the way that we're partnering, though, we were working in a really diligent way with our home health and hospice partners to screen residents who need those services, make sure that referral is timely, make sure that we're seeing timely initiation of care. So we sometimes see that our care initiations or care starts for home health maybe are a little bit slower than some others. So trying to work with our agencies to say, like, hey, there are going to be some residents that we really do need you to get to right away. And we're going to have a process to communicate to you who those are. The thing I'm most excited about is we have the start of a geriatric care coordination program. And that, I think, is the gap in senior living. We see, you know, I'm the CEO of Ascension Living, and I have a boss. So my boss knows like kind of a lot about senior living. And I think I know a bit, and my family has had to place a family member, and she's also had to place a family member. And Austin, it's hard.
Like, yeah.
We know it. We know the rules. We know the options. We know the financial impacts. Like, I mean, a lot of families are finding out they're going to have to pay out of pocket for this.
Right.
And it's still so hard. And if it's that hard for us, and even today, like I have a family member who really probably needs an official dementia diagnosis, right? We know that that changes some of the access to services. We cannot get her access to that. Like, we are just at a place as a family where we've sort of given up being able to access that.
Wow.
And that's going to be a problem in the future because
right.
she's not in memory
right.
care right now and is probably going to need it. And we'll cross that bridge when we get there, but it's hard. And
yeah.
I feel like if we really want to invite the next generation of residents in with us, we are going to have to make it a lot easier because, you know, I think about my parents who are boomers and like there's just a much lower, I think, tolerance for frustration and barriers than what we've seen before. And if we can't streamline this and make it easier and smoother for our residents, they'll find who can.
Right.
Or they just won't come to us, which
right,
is
exactly.
also
yeah.
bad.
Yeah. And that's one of the things, I mean, the penetration rate for senior living we know has kind of hovered pretty statically, even in the last 5 years, in that 10 to 12% range, and increasing it seems to be a huge challenge. And recently we've had some operators, and I think this has been a theme, just talk about some of the education efforts that they've had to do in their local markets of letting people know about some of the structures of private pay senior living, and that the fact that there isn't a lot of government assistance there, and nothing related to CMS. And so we know that I think there's a gap in not only access to the services, but even general knowledge and education. So we know that that's a huge piece that really plays into kind of where the industry is headed when everyone talks about the demand for the next generations that are coming. I think there's kind of a two-sided problem there of education, but also being able to have as many units as needed to capture demand. And it's unfortunate. And I appreciate you being candid and sharing your personal story, because I think it's reflective of a lot of journeys that a lot of families face when their loved ones may need care. And there's some really tough decisions that have to be made. So I want to just say thank you for sharing that, because I think there are a lot of our listeners out there who've probably experienced a similar thing. So thank you so much for sharing that. I want to go back to your point on staffing, because I think it's important that we cover that, because you've really dove in, like you said, on staffing in the last few years. In terms of the turnover piece, we know that this has always been an issue in the industry. And I think in the last few years, it's been pretty tough, but it's maybe gotten a little bit easier as hireability becomes a little bit easier for certain operators. We know there's challenges in rural markets where we know some of Ascension's communities are. So you really have to get creative on staffing, and you have to think about staffing maybe a little bit differently. But what's been the journey like on retention and that turnover piece? What have you really been focusing on? It sounds like you've really taken a lot of that accountability and transparency and put that at the center of what you do. But I'd like to learn from you kind of where you see all this work being done on turnover and improving retention.
Yeah, you know, for us, retention is it's important, right? There is a direct link to the bottom line around retention. And it's easy, I think, sometimes to forget that. And it is very, very real. And for me, that's hundreds and hundreds of just nurses a year that I need to get hired to fill all of my positions that are turning over. So for me, when I'm thinking about retention, you know, the number one factor in retention, and we know this, evidence is strong, it is relationship with manager. And so we have done a ton of work around providing our leaders with the tools and best practices, really, on like, here's how often you have to meet with associates to have development conversations to retain them. And it's a minimum of once a quarter. It's not a lot, you know, it's 30 minutes every 90 days that you need to spend with your associate, finding out how they're doing. We also have spent a lot of time on things like, what is that new associate experience like? So new associate orientation was pretty not standardized. We've done a lot of work in the last year on new associate orientation, not only for our frontline clinician associates, but maybe even more importantly, our leaders. So really intense orientation as leaders come into the organization around what is the Ascension Living way? How do we stay compliant? How do we do service recovery? How do we serve our residents? How do we serve our associates? How often do you have to check in with your associates, sure, and document, yeah, that and have that conversation? So we have spent a lot of time focusing on the leadership piece of the retention, mm-hmm, equation, because that, I mean, right, that is that's really the key. And the second piece is from, you know, I guess the corporate, because I'm corporate, from the corporate support center standpoint, we're really looking at how do we build an orientation that is easy to implement in communities and makes associates feel loved and welcomed and wanted. I think if we can really get them that feeling in the first few weeks through that first 90 days, we know a lot of people will stay. They'll stay a year or 2 years, and even if all we get is a year or two, which that might be common in our industry.
Sure.
That's a year or two of an associate that is there and consistent and gets to know our residents.
Yeah, and I think also too, we know that if you can make a good first impression, in especially once you're bringing on a new associate, if you have a that orientation process that is welcoming and is able to, I think, maybe ease the kind of transition into senior living for folks who maybe haven't been involved in any sort of care setting previously, what that process is like. So great to hear you've been able to make some improvements there and starting to see some good results there. I know too that before we hopped on, you had mentioned too some of the tech enhancements, the Wi-Fi improvements, and you're exploring all sorts of things with assistive things like artificial intelligence and robotics and operations where possible. We know there's still a lot of work to be done there. And I think we're kind of right at the beginning stages of what that could look like. But I think this is also important because it's kind of a part of the operational side. You're making sure that the infrastructure is in place for all your teams to be able to execute and do their jobs. What's the journey been like there? It seems like you've really overhauled and made a lot of new investments in the last few years too, to, I think, essentially modernize what Ascension can offer.
Yeah, we like a lot of senior living operators, we had a lot of deferred maintenance through COVID. And, you know, that was hard times. There really was not capital available. And so I've been so fortunate. I feel blessed to have come into the organization at a time that was starting to lighten up. I mean, my predecessors had to make really difficult decisions. So now we're at a place where, you know, we've been able to invest in getting all of our facilities kind of back into working order and everything where it should be. And now we're investing in updating what we call the look and feel. So making sure that we really are presenting our communities as loved and cared for, which they are, and updated and all of that. So the past few years, it's been like it's really been in our facilities. Like, we've needed to actually invest in the physical facilities.
Yep.
We now in the last year have started to do things like updating and optimizing our Wi-Fi and starting to prepare for the future of technology. And like, I think a lot of senior living operators, we're probably a little behind where we would ideally like to be. We do use Matrix Care for EHR. So we are at a place of working on our updated EHR integration as that happens. So, you know, we needed Wi-Fi to get a better EHR. Now we have a better EHR. That is kind of the next step for, one, building out a very different data analytics platform. So this is a huge gap. And I actually was at the NIC conference, and so got to go through an exercise in sort of assessing our data availability. And actually, we weren't worse. We were solid right in the middle, because this is where a lot of senior living operators are. I can get my data. Sometimes I can get it right away. Sometimes it's going to take a couple days. It's probably not integrated. And rarely is it ahead of whatever I'm trying to measure. It's almost always reactive.
Yeah. We're
often only able to catch lagging measures. And that's really hard to run a business. So that has been a huge gap. I'm blessed to have a new CFO, Molly Vaughn, who is partnering with me, and her and I together are working on, you know, how do we build out all of the analytics that we need in a way that it comes out, it's easily accessible, it's actionable for our executive directors and directors of nursing, and it helps us really run our business day to day. Right now, we're sort of just using like a compass and protractor and a map and hoping that we get where we need to go. We mostly do, but like, boy, it'd be a lot better to have GPS. And that's where we're trying to go.
I think that's a great analogy for where the industry is headed, especially on tech adoption too, because we've seen varying levels of it. Kind of from your perspective, it sounds like you really are thinking about this and overhauling kind of from the old model to where senior living is headed to something that can be more predictive and more less reactionary, and being able to make some more insights, whether that's on the care side or lifestyle and engagement side. We know there's a lot of opportunities for, if you've got forward-looking data, you can maybe see where things are headed and kind of address issues as they arise. So sounds like you've really thought about this a lot and are really starting to take some of the first steps needed to get there. So that's great to hear. Yeah.
It's exciting, Austin, because you know we're on this journey for care and for associates and all of that, but I was able to meet with some residents last night, and as I was talking to them about just, you know, woes, things that they'd like me to work on, one of my residents was talking about meal ordering and, you know, could we just order ourselves through a ticket, like with a piece of paper? And one of my other residents was like, no, we want it electronic. And, you know, so I think to be at a place where our residents are starting mm-hmm. to say, like, have you thought about using an electronic version?
Sure.
You know, when my 86-year-old resident is the one saying it, like, it's time. It's time right. to really right. just dive headfirst into technology.
Definitely. Yeah. And we've got just a few minutes left here, and I want to get to, I know I've got a few questions I don't think we'll be able to touch on, but that's okay. There's always room for follow-up. I want to touch on two points here, because in our Changemakers profile that we had published with you earlier this year, you had emphasized shifting the public perception of senior living. And I think this gets back to that piece on education that we had touched on earlier in our conversation here. Especially seeing it as a desirable lifestyle and not a last resort, which I think a lot of people, especially here in many markets across the country, people are really holding off, and especially after the pandemic, really waiting as long as possible to not go into a congregate setting. So are there any areas where you're really trying to help kind of push this narrative forward? I'd love to get your perspective on this, because I think you're totally right in we need to change that public perception, and it's another thing to be able to get there. So are there any areas you're really looking at for doing that? Is that all in the education piece? I just want to get your thoughts.
I know that this is a problem, and it's something that I spend a lot of time like thinking about. I'll share my tactic right now. I am not new to healthcare. I've been in healthcare for a very long time.
Right.
And yet I was so surprised by so much of what I learned in senior living. And it's interesting that there is almost a curtain between senior living and the rest of healthcare, where what we do is sort of obscure. No one really knows. Like if you go into a hospital, unless they've right. worked there, they probably really do not know what we're doing. And I think this is really hard, because when we think about where do people get guidance for difficult decisions around their health, especially as they're aging, you know, our residents are going to physicians, they're going to NPs, they're going to their providers. And I would bet that it is very rare for a provider to say, you know what, I think a senior living solution would really be ideal for you, and let me tell you all of the reasons why. And the reasons are, here are all the problems that we solve for seniors. But those physicians don't even know that. That's not how they think about us, because sure. what they see and hear about are probably mostly the things that go really poorly.
Right.
Like those are the patients that are coming back to them. And, you know, mom was in this place and it was terrible and they did this and they did that. And so there is very much this sort of preconceived notion, I think, of our partners in healthcare around what we do and who we are, and what we're trying to do and how we could partner with them. And that, I think, like if we could get our colleagues in healthcare to also be advocates for us, that will make a lot of movement, because they are guiding people on these decisions and they are saying things. And sometimes it's not intentional, you know, like, man, I'd never go somewhere once I'm older. like, we have to be really careful about that. I used to say that, and now I'm like, there's going to come a day where I'm not going to have any friends around me and no one to take care of me, and I'm going to be bored. And, you know, if I don't want to just have 60 cats, maybe senior living is something for me to think about, where they feed me and they have activities and I get to have friends again and interaction and purpose and meaning. Like, that's a lot. We give people purpose and meaning.
Right.
When they often don't have any left.
Right. And we just saw, we had reported on this yesterday from one of my reporting colleagues on the ground, Andrew Christman. He had just written, there was a story about some of the perceptions of senior living changing, but also now there was some recent Nick and NORC data that had come out about all the actual concrete benefits looking at CMS claims related to people who lived in congregate settings compared to those who didn't. So we're starting to see even some empirical evidence showing that there are these really strong benefits to living in senior living. And I think it's the onus is on the industry to kind of have that education effort. So it'll be interesting to see how that evolves, I think, over time. Aaron, last question here, and then we'll get you out of here. What's your outlook for 2026? What can we expect from Ascension? Anything you're looking at for the new year?
I have a really positive outlook for 2026. We have a lot of really exciting upgrades that are going to come to our organization in 2026. So, you know, when I think about what next year is going to look like as we move through it, I think we're going to see even better retention of our associates, which I'm excited about. I want associates who've been here for a long time and love it. We are starting to see waiting lists at community. So we've had a big push around occupancy, and that's really exciting to start to see some of this reinvigoration of communities that we've been working on. And then, you know, probably the thing that I'm most excited about is we are doing a lot of work around memory support, including, you know, establishing some philanthropy options and really starting to drive a really robust memory care program that is, you know, training of our associates, training of family, engaging residents, managing activities, you know, improving cognitive brain health where we can, slowing down progression of disease, and then early identification and intervention in all of our settings that are not memory support. So a lot of investment around that, and I'm really excited. I think that's a huge need and is one of the things that'll be hopefully something that residents are looking for, is somewhere that cares about keeping their brain as healthy for as long as possible.
Right. And we know that that cognitive piece is huge, especially not just on the clinical side, but also in the lifestyle and the programmatic side as well. So we know there's a lot of opportunities. And through our publication, Memory Care Business on Senior Housing News, it's been interesting to kind of profile some of those things. So we'll have to connect offline and maybe get Ascension in to a future edition. We run that monthly. So maybe that's something we could look at. But Aaron, thank you so much for taking the time. This was a wonderful conversation here on Transform. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Take care.
That does it for this episode of Transform. I'm Austin Montgomery for Senior Housing News. Thanks for listening.